Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Here with me today are two of the co-authors of a book called Fix It, Getting Accountability Right. It's a subject that's important for anybody who's in a leadership role and probably anybody who listens to this podcast. They are some of the people who wrote The Oz Principle. That was their original book. It was written by Roger Connors, Tom Smith, and Craig Hickman. The Oz Principle arguably shifted how we think about and how we manage accountability in organizations. Craig Hickman is here with us. As I said, he was a co-author of The Oz Principle. He's a partner at Partners in Leadership. And he was one of the co-authors in Fix It, which was their subsequent book on how you take accountability issues and fix them in organizations. It was a well-titled book. We also have with us Marcus Nichols. He's also a senior partner at Partners in Leadership and a co-author of Fix It. So Marcus and Craig, welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Peter.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Great to be here.
So I want to start with talking about the Oz Principle. It set out sort of four elements of managing and mastering accountability in organizations and driving accountability through. First of all, I want to ask you why accountability? Why is that? I mean, it may seem obvious, but why is that, you know, such a critical element of all of the work that you do and something that we should all be paying attention to? And two is, if you can take us through those, you know, briefly, those four elements so we can get everybody up to speed.
Great. So let me start, and then Marcus, you can add in. Accountability is the basis for organizational life. If you don't have it, it will affect everything that you do. So getting to a level of accountability that will drive the organization forward is critical. And there's not an organization on the planet that doesn't want to achieve greater levels of accountability. Because there's this inherent understanding that if people aren't taking accountability in the organization, you're going to have problems, and that's certainly our experience. So
Let me just take a step back and let's define accountability.
Yeah. So accountability is, so if you look at a typical dictionary definition of accountability, you're going to hear things like subject to, having to report, being answerable, being responsible. So there's a negative connotation around accountability that we confront every day. Our definition of accountability, and a much more productive definition of accountability, is that it's a personal choice to rise above your circumstances and own the situation. And in particular, own the results that you need to achieve. And then we introduce the four steps to accountability, which is see it, own it, solve it, do it. That's our definition of accountability. Marcus?
Yeah. Yeah, to add to that, Craig and Peter, that, you know, our experience with accountability tends to be punitive. And the interesting irony of this is that if you ask people individually if they're accountable, what do you think we hear, Peter?
Absolutely. They're totally accountable.
You know, 99 times out of 99 times, you get some version of, yes, I am accountable. And yet everyone sees a need for greater accountability in the organization. I mean, universally, we work with executive leadership teams on a weekly basis all over the globe. And as such, we have insight into patterns and habits of effective leaders and leadership teams. And I'd say fairly universally, accountability is up there in the top three as far as needs in the organization.
I mean, it's somewhat similar to the way you're describing it. The research that you've heard, I'm sure, done around driver's licenses or drivers, you know, and people, I think 90% of the people call themselves above average drivers.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Leaders obviously want everybody to take accountability, right? Because ultimately, if everyone in the organization is showing up and being accountable for the work that needs to get done, that the organization is going to operate effectively. There's also, it seems to be a tendency in organizations for people to some degree, distance themselves from that accountability. Why?
You know, it's a great question. We introduce the central model of the Oz principle is that there's a line. Above the line, you're accountable. Below the line, you're unaccountable. Above the line is where you get the desired results. Below the line is where you get undesired results. So it's a... It's basic human nature to go below the line. All of us do. Below the line is the blame game, the victim cycle. There are these classic positions of ignore, deny, it's not my job, finger pointing, confusion, tell me what to do, wait and see, cover your tail. All of those are kind of classic positions below the line that make up the realm of excuse making. That's where... There's a real gravitational pull to go below the line. So there's a problem, results aren't achieved, and because of our current environment around accountability, it often becomes a gotcha game. So we learn in organizations, be careful, things go bad, the word accountability is going to come up, and it's now a gotcha game. It's who's at fault. And that's what we're battling. So we've actually created some of this ourselves in organizations. Not only is there a gravitational pull that takes most of us below the line from time to time, we create that environment in organizations by playing this gotcha game, this game of who's at fault. So the key is recognize the human tendency to go below the line. It's natural. All of us go down there. It's a great place to vent. Sometimes we have to go there to keep our heads from exploding. But the key is it's normal. It's not wrong to go below the line. But the issue, Peter, is what do you think we ask clients? What is wrong about going below the line?
Well, you know, I mean, is it obviously what's wrong about going below the line, right? Is that nothing ever gets done. I mean, if no one's taking the blame and nobody's saying I'm accountable for this, then it's impossible to move forward. You're not going to learn anything. You're not going to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so what we say is that the problem with going below the line is getting stuck there, is staying there, because exactly what you said, nothing happens down there that is productive and beneficial. Sometimes there are some results that are achieved, but by and large, you never achieve the desired results below the line. So it's a journey to get above the line and take the four steps, see it, own it, solve it, do it.
So here's my question, and this is my ultimate question. Almost always on the podcast, I'm very focused on application, right? On actually how we put this into practice, and ultimately you are too, right? Because you guys are consultants and you're working in organizations to drive this home. So you're not academics writing about this; you're practitioners, which I appreciate. The challenge when I look at the methodology of the four things that you described, right? See it, own it, solve it, and do it. Ultimately, nobody would dispute the process or importance of following these four steps, right? Nobody would say it's a bad idea to see a problem, to own it, to solve it, and to follow through and fix it. Right. Nobody would argue.
That's
I'm
right.
Sure nobody has ever argued with you in the, I don't know, this book maybe has been out 10 years.
20.
I don't think anyone's probably ever argued 20 years. So I imagine in 20 years, has anyone ever argued with you that said, you know, these steps are wrong, or it's a bad idea to see a problem, or it's a bad idea to own it and solve
no.
it?
No, they haven't. Marcus, take this one.
Yeah, of course not. And that's part of the power here, Peter. What we think we've captured in the steps to accountability is something that already exists in everyone. It's universally acknowledged. We've done this work in over 100 countries, thousands of client organizations, and you're right. Nobody says, you know, I think let's just own it, solve it, and do it. We don't need to see it clearly. Of course, that never happens. And each of those steps is a decision. So the application you're getting to here, Peter, is essential. No, nobody changes behavior because they read a book or go to a workshop or a seminar. We know that. The change comes with deliberate practice over time. So associated with these steps are a few simple tools and some best practices, which was the emphasis of fix it. But back to the Oz principle and these steps to accountability, because they're so universally acknowledged, it can be very superficial for people. It can go in one ear and out the other because it's like, oh yeah, I get that. And by the way, that's me. That's how I operate. People externalize the need for change, part of the problem we talked about earlier. And so what the steps to accountability, above the line and below the line, this framework provide people a common sense framework, a mental model to actually apply personally this understanding of, wow, personal accountability means me, not everyone else. It's not someone or something getting in my way. It's what else am I going to do?
And here's the gem. So this is the gem, I think, that I want to explore, which is that, you know, I loved Fix It. I thought Fix It was, and, you know, we can kind of shift and have this conversation about Fix It, which is, you know, hundreds of tools, right? Literally hundreds that can help you in each of these stages, right? Yeah. That can help you see something, that can help you own it. And the underlying requirement to putting any of these in practice is overcoming the emotional challenge of looking at a problem and saying, I'm actually going to risk getting blamed for something. I'm going to face my probably childhood fears of being punished when I do things wrong. I'm going to stick my neck out and say, I was responsible for something that I'm now going to fix, and I'm not going to point a finger at somebody else. And when you think of these very simple kindergarten behaviors, they're deeply challenging for us on a day-to-day basis when our jobs are on the line, when we've got bosses who might yell at us, when we've got people who might say we're not, you know, good colleagues, who when we might face our own fears of competence and capability and fraud, you know, the mm-hmm. kind of fraud idea of should I be here anyway. So I'm really curious about, in all of your experience, how do we move through that most difficult of stages to get to a place where we can then look at it and go, now here's a group of solutions that are really effective and really work, and we know them because we've used them in practice, and now we can follow step one, step two, step three.
It's really basic. It's why the line is so important. Disney has a saying that is kind of at the core of their culture, which is it's not my fault, but it is my problem. So the shift you're making here as you go from below the line to above the line is you stop saying, it's not my fault, I didn't do this, don't blame me, and you move to, I'm the solution. I am a problem solver. I am going to do something about this, regardless of who created this problem, why it happened, why we don't deserve it, why it's totally outside of our control. You literally have a mindset change, and it affects everything. It affects your mind, it affects your heart, and your commitment, your passion. You move to a resolve that you are going to see it, own it, solve it, do it. Doesn't mean you need to solve all the world's problems tomorrow, but it does mean that you are in a solution mindset. Yeah. That's the key shift.
In what way do you think it's important in that solution mindset to look back and understand the origins of the problem? Because I think that might be where people get stuck a little bit, is to say, let's pull this problem apart and understand how it happened in order to solve for it appropriately. So to me, it seems like that might be a very useful step. On the other hand, that's also a step that can send us down the rabbit hole of whose fault was it and why did they do it in the first place?
Yeah, one of the best practices here, you know, under the own it step, is learning from both successes and failures. So even though that's an own it piece, you know, there are some really important questions that naturally fall into each of these steps. And really what you're describing, Peter, is how do we see it clearly? And so a very effective question around see it is, what's the reality I most need to acknowledge? You know, if people aren't acknowledging reality, how are they how are they going to take ownership and solve for it and actually get something done that's real? And if you're unwilling to hear the hard things, you're not going to see reality. So these 16 accountability traits profiled in Fixit dig into each one of these. And I've just mentioned two of them. Under the See It step, we've got hearing the hard things to see reality, and under Own It, it's learning from both successes and failures. So the See It step may be one of, if not the most challenging for people, because we are locked in already to the way we see things. You know, no one wakes up in the morning and pops their head off the pillow and looks for a way to invalidate the way they see the world. It's just the opposite, right? We call it belief bias or confirmation bias, that we're pre kind of determined to see things through the lens of our own view and our own thoughts. And when we see things that happen, we go, yep, there we go. I knew it. I knew he'd say that. I knew they'd act like that. Obviously, they're going to say that. And it prevents us from actually seeing clearly, being open and candid. So what you're talking about in those fears, the first step really is to see it. And so how do you do that? How do you see it? It is a mindset, and it's a choice people make. Are you going to keep your blinders on? Are you going to keep your ideas and thoughts to yourself as superior? Or are you going to be, you know, open to the perspectives of others?
You know, and part of it, I guess, is what leaders can do to help people, to predispose people to
Absolutely.
That kind of mindset. And it brings me to this distinction that that I often hear. And I often hear people say, you know, a senior leader say, I need to mm-hmm. hold them accountable, right? I'm going to hold someone accountable. Versus what I think you're describing, which is from the person's perspective, taking Absolutely. Accountability. And this distinction between taking accountability and holding someone accountable feels very important to me. And I'm curious to hear you talk about
it. Yeah, it's a great distinction. And it's one we deal with all the time. It's clients, the prospective clients that call us and want us to come in and help them. It's usually with that question. Can you come and help us hold our people accountable? And our response is, of course, we'd be happy to help you, but you've got to do this from the right baseline. And the right baseline and the right foundation is taking personal accountability. Otherwise, holding others accountable can really get out of line quickly and become problematic. We often talk about the accountability paradox, which is the more you hold people accountable the wrong way, the less accountability you get. Mm-hmm. So what is the wrong way? The wrong way is using accountability as a club or a hammer, and then demanding, I'm going to hold you accountable for this. What you want to do is create an environment where people are taking accountability. This is a personal choice. You want to create the environment where people are anxious to take accountability. And to your earlier question, and what Marcus said about seeing it, that first step is difficult. And sometimes when people take it, they see all the crazy things organizations do. And there are lots of reasons to go below the line and point out this problem, that problem, and this was a predecessor, this was another department, this was something that happened in the marketplace, was totally outside of our control. So the key is, it's okay to go below the line and get that stuff vented, but then you've got to face the reality, okay, we're not going to come to a solution here below the line. We've identified lots of problems. Now we got to own this. We got to own this, get above it. This is part of seeing reality. It's acknowledging the reality that has created our situation. And that's that first step above the line. And it is a healthy place to be. And when our experience is when people go there and embrace it, they feel better. They are there's less stress. Problem doesn't change, but they have a totally different mindset. They have a totally different feeling. Their commitment is different. And that's what creates not only a culture of accountability, but a very healthy organization.
So what do you advise a leader? Because that moment seems like we've hit on the right moment. That moment of from below the line to above the line. The moment where someone goes from rejecting accountability or defensiveness in the face of a problem to accepting accountability and looking to be part of the solution. And you hear people say that you're going to be part of the problem or you're going to be part of the solution. But how do you shift the mood of an organization, the culture of an organization, to one where you make it easier for people to be courageous in owning issues and solving them?
Yeah, Greg, I'll take a stab here and then add your 2 cents. But as you might expect, Peter, culture reflects leadership. Culture is just the way people think and act to get things done. And there's a very strong connection between a leader of any organization or team and the disposition and culture of that team. So as we work with organizations to help them create a culture of accountability in the most positive sense, there's a strong emphasis on making it leader-led. It's not uncommon if we're sitting with the leadership team and they're getting initially exposed to our models and tools for them to get a feeling like, wow, this would be great. We could really use this to fix the employees. And as soon as we recognize that, we jump on that and help them recognize that's, you're externalizing the need for change here. The same happens if we're in the middle of an organization. We're talking with a group, someone's going to raise their hand and say, this is great stuff, but have you talked with the leadership team? Because they're the ones that really need this. That's the human nature. It's like, this would be great for someone else. I saw a t-shirt on a guy recently. It said, change is good. You go first.
But I think you're saying exactly that, right? I mean, you're also saying that has to happen.
Yes.
Meaning unless the CEO or unless the senior leaders go first, that the battle is not one.
You're right, Peter. For the organization, that is true. However, we never miss the fact that what Craig said earlier, taking accountability is a personal choice. So we want to actually create a culture in the organization where the leaders lead by example. They're demonstrating what it looks like to demonstrate accountability and to take accountability. Now, every person in the organization has to make that choice as well, but they're a lot more likely to do so when they're being led that way. And they're actually given a simple common language and mental model that captures efficiently the way we all go after this at the same time. Now, naturally, there are other tools here beyond the steps to accountability and the tools associated with there, but they all combine as a system to help accelerate creating that sort of a culture where you are unleashing at every level of the organization people's ability to actually see it and own it and solve it. One president of a company I was working with recently said, I've been the president 10 months here. We did an assessment around these best practices. And as we looked at the assessment together, I said, so Doug, what are your observations? And he looked at it and he goes, wow, this is really interesting. It looks like we're pretty good at own it and we're pretty good at do it. And he goes, and that makes sense to me because what I've observed here as the president is we've got a lot of good soldiers. They'll do what we ask them to do if we tell them to do it. And we paint the path for them. But what I need to see a lot more of people actually seeing the problem and figuring out how to solve it so it's not all on my shoulders. And so that's what this construct really opens up an organization to be able to do at every level, get people personally taking those steps and not waiting to be told what to do or leaders feeling like they have to tell people what to do. It truly does unleash the capabilities of an organization when you create a culture where people know what it means and know how to take personal accountability.
I think also the mere articulation of these 4 steps is very helpful, right? Which is that to the extent that there is a process, it reduces the necessary courage, right? It reduces how deeply people have to well it up in themselves to say, okay, we're going to have a process. We're going to start with seeing it and then owning it and then solving it and then doing it. We're in mm-hmm. the C stage. What are the problems yep. that we see? What are the issues? Like, where are their opportunities? So just having a structure
Absolutely.
Like that is in and of itself reduces the
it reduces the bar problem for... solving cycle time. That's what it does, Peter. And I've never met a CEO that doesn't want that. So in fact, Craig and I are familiar with one leader who's brought us into 4 separate organizations, And the way he describes the steps to accountability, he says, the steps to accountability are basic training for any employee in an organization I lead. And so he wants them to have that construct so they can apply that on a daily basis in their work.
And when someone, when you're a leader and someone has these tools and yet they aren't taking accountability, they're not taking personal responsibility, I'm going to ask kind of a harsh question, which is at that point, do you just say, this just isn't going to work? Do you, you know, how do you then create every opportunity for them to do it? But ultimately, if they're not going to take ownership, then is there, you know, would your advice be have them leave the organization?
But this really goes to the leader's, the core of the leader's challenge and to the core of leadership. So, and it's really why we entitled this sequel, Fix It. So it's a bold title. It does imply that something's wrong, really wrong, and then it needs addressing. And that's exactly how we see this. Leaders have got to fix this personal accountability issue for themselves first. If they're not taking personal accountability as a leader, they're not going to be able to help others do the same. So the leader first step is make sure, and so that's why apply Fix It to yourself. Go through the process, identify which of the traits you need to work on, and start fixing, and make that visible to the people that you're leading. Then you go to, again, leading by example, as we've talked about. Then you go to helping whoever is struggling. They're stuck below the line. So using the model of above and below the line can help intellectually. But then what they've got to do is they've got to start demonstrating that they're willing to see it. So where are they below the line? So again, now it's how do you help individuals make the decision to fix it for themselves, and you create an environment where when the accountability isn't right, we fix it. Ultimately, if you create the right environment, our experience is you can most people want to get above the line. Most people have a craving to be connected to what matters most. They have a craving to be doing things that add value, that actually produce results. So there's not this general unwillingness out there in the world. People are willing, but ultimately, to your point, Peter, if you create that environment, if the leader is fixing accountability issues for himself or herself, creating an environment where everyone's being encouraged to fix it for themselves and for the team, and somebody's still not doing it and they're stuck and they seem to be immovably stuck below the line, then you need to you probably need to help them find an environment where they can get unstuck because they're making a conscious choice to remain stuck in this environment.
And that also actually in some ways seems to turn on its head the fear that most people have. Most people have a fear that says, if I take accountability, if I take the blame in effect even, which I know is different than accountability, then I'm going to get in trouble. It's the reason we don't do it. If in effect the shift in culture is that if I don't take accountability, that's when I'm in trouble, that's another nudge. You know, as I read the book and as I listen to you guys, I think more and more what we're looking at is how do you create nudges in the organization to lead people down a path that they have a natural disinclination to following. Like their natural disinclination coming probably from childhood says, I'm going to, you know, it reminds me of when my son came out of the kitchen and he had chocolate all over his face. And I said to him, Daniel, how did you like the chocolate? And he looked at me, oh, no, I'm sorry. I said, Daniel, what were you eating? And he looked at me and he goes, I wasn't eating any chocolate. I didn't eat any chocolate. And I, you know, and it's like that, you know, fear. And I mean, I said to him, well, go look in the mirror and then come back and tell me you didn't eat any chocolate. But, But that's in fact what we're saying. We're saying to people, go look in the mirror and then come back and take
some accountability. And what you're describing, Peter, we would capture that in this broad word culture, right? Now, if Daniel had come out and you'd gotten all over and hammered him and created a very negative experience, it doesn't mean he's never going to do that again, but it's going to mean he's going to hide it. He's going to make sure he doesn't get caught. The way you as a leader interact in that moment is what it's all about. And so we're helping leaders understand, for you personally, as Craig said, if you can master these simple steps of see it, own it, solve it, do it, and in your interactions with others, you're actually modeling that. You're creating experiences that actually develop the right thinking in others. That's what this is all about. This is how we fix it.
So Fix It, that is the book. Fix It, Getting Accountability Right, 240 Solutions to Your Toughest Business Problems. It's the official sequel to The Oz Principle. We've been listening to Craig Hickman and Marcus Nichols sharing their perspective and their wisdom with us. Thank you both for being on the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. It's been great.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.